You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100, and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the don't nearly view system deal. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello. Welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. I'm your host, Ajit. Today, we have a frequent collaborator, a friend from Bangalore, Ramchandra, joining. Hello, Ramchandra. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Ajit. Nice to be here again.
Always welcome to have you as a guest. You bring very good insights. Yeah. So, let's get into it right away. The Pakistan upset by Afghanistan. Let's start there. The 22nd match in Chennai. Did you get a chance to catch this?
Yeah, I watched it live. The Afghanistan chase was fantastic. I initially, Ajit, when it started like 2-20, I thought that Pakistan have an off on the board to trouble Afghanistan. But the kind of start the Afghanistan team got, like, they never looked back once it was 100 for no loss, and then they just kept on piling those runs and they found boundaries. So it was a proper like chase what we used to see in the late 90s and early 2000s. You know, in those just 2-20 used to be considered a very stiff target. A fantastic run chase. I mean, full marks to the whole Afghanistan team.
Absolutely. Before we get to the chase, do you think Pakistan played it a bit too conservatively in the middle overs because they had a set bowler?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are no two ways about it. I think they should have aimed for 320-330 to take the score beyond Afghanistan's reach. Probably that conservative approach. If you look at, from the past 2 years, the way we're playing, probably it's hurting them in the longer run, but no one is addressing that. They're playing the old-fashioned ODI cricket where, they slow down in the middle overs and then you again have a flourish in the end. That's not going to happen these days. You've got to go hammer and tongs. I mean, keep your wickets intact and make sure even in the middle overs, you're getting at least 5 to 6 runs every over. Make that, that run rate has to be somewhere around 5 and 6. I think 280, you end up getting 280 against Afghanistan, you're asking for trouble. And unfortunately for Pakistan, Afghanistan had a very good day with the bat. And you would usually see that Afghanistan losing wickets in a heap, against a new ball. Unfortunately, Shahin Shad Afridi could not bowl his usual kind of customary spells here where he would get 2 or 3 with the new ball. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And Pakistan were... understandably found wanting.
Look, that is one thing. I think Shadab also played a decent hand, but Saud Shakil, yes. I was expecting a bit more. Rizwan was due for a failure. It can happen. He failed.
Yeah.
Babar, I expected maybe to boss this sort of a mid-lower phase and get to 100 in those same 9200 balls that he got. Probably Pakistan left 20 runs out in the field. But also a word on how well Nabi bowled, for example, and then Rashid Khan and Noor Ahmed bowled. So they played Rashid Khan out. You could see that they were not going to take too many risks against him. He was hit for just one boundary shot each, from 4 and 1 6.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That shows, in 60 balls of bowling, they were very conservative. They were happy to target Naveen ul Haq, even Mujibur Rahman, because of the speed he offers. Azmatullah Omar Zai went for a lot of runs. But I think the revelation was Noor Ahmed. Did you see how he bowled?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a great prospect. I think I even saw him bowling in the IPL, you know, the way Hardik Pandya used him. I think like he has a lot of tricks up his sleeve, and he can bamboozle any batsman on a given day. So no surprises there. And I think there, the Afghanistan bowling is always there. The spin attack is a quality one. But I think what really helped Afghanistan to a certain extent while they were batting, were chasing, is Pakistan's poor fielding. That is such an important aspect of the game. And
yes. And
they're not really concentrating. I mean, you ground fielding and catching is so very important. You make or break the games with fielding. And if you are so lethargic with the field, where even like the customary fields, the customary catches, the regulation catches, you're not holding on to them, then you're asking for trouble. And Pakistan did not deserve to win. It is there. I am not sure whether it should be calling this an upset, to be very honest. Afghanistan is a quality side and they can thrash anyone. Yeah, obviously, it's their first ever victory against Pakistan. 7-1 is what their head-to-head stands now. But in the days to come, probably in the next decade or so, probably you'll get a much even contest. Hopefully, Afghanistan can have 4 or 5 quality batters in the days to come. Obviously, there's always the bowling to back it up. So we'll have one more powerhouse in the Asian, cricket.
I mean, with their performance here, right? Their chase was like a template of how you would chase such a game. Top four, all of them nearly 50. I mean, 3 of them over 50, one just near missing a 50 with one shot or something. But maybe they didn't like it that they took it all the way to the almost last over. But outside of that,
last over,
so good a chase that you could not count on anything other than this, I think.
Yes. At no point in the chase, Ajit, they were under pressure. They always kept their run rate required run rate under check. So that was the beauty of the whole chase. It was never that the required run rate went beyond 6.5 or 7. It was always kept in the check. Whenever they had a couple of quiet overs, the third or the fourth over, they used to get 10, 15 runs. So that used to like stabilize the things a bit and ease their nerves. And then they used to go on with their business with the usual 5 or 6 runs over with taking singles and twos. And yeah, obviously, I mean, this is probably one of those games. Probably you'll understand and you'll enjoy this game only if you watch, this game ball by ball, because it was such a beautiful game to watch. If you have watched the games in the 90s and the 2000s, how the one day cricket used to be played, this template was something of that era.
Well, a couple of things that really impressed me. One was what you said, the fielding, right? Even until the 42nd, 43rd over, Afghanistan found a way to get at least one dot ball or two dot balls simply through ground fielding in the inner circle, right? In contrast to how Pakistan fielded, where they probably thought in their minds that they have enough runs. Probably that came back to bite them potentially, right?
They probably were a bit complacent, as you said. Yeah, true.
So that is one thing. The other thing for me, even while batting, again, when you go to the 42nd, 43rd over, they were playing it clearly like how top order batsmen would play in the middle overs. 4 singles and over, 5 singles and over, a boundary every third over or so. Right? Ideal, very ideal for me. So they were really in control. And up until the winning runs were scored, I saw no undue emotions. They were very much in control of everything. So that was a very mature display by Afghanistan. It gives us all a very good, what you said, a hope that, you know, in the coming years, they may actually become the second or the third best team in Asia, maybe even the best team in Asia. Who knows, right?
Who knows? Yeah, true.
All right. What does that mean for Pakistan's chances now? They are still fifth on the table, but we'll come to the result today when Australia have won another game against Netherlands and very, very comfortably, right? So the difference between these two teams. So in theory, Afghanistan, Pakistan have the same number of points. Pakistan have a much better net run rate. Right?
Yes.
So what does this mean for Pakistan going into the next couple of games is what I would like to understand. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah. See, I don't think their fate is in their own hands, to be very honest. They probably need a couple of results to go there in their favor. Probably want the top teams to lose a few games for them. But having said that, they need to do the first thing first. They need to win all their games. And it's not going to be easy. They have a few tough games coming up. So, like, win as many as you could and just hope for the best. Probably they were pushed to the corner, just like it happened in the 1992 World Cup. But their fortune did favor them. I think one of the games were rained off, and they won probably which they should have lost the, probably that was drained off and they were able to get 1 point out of it. So they need something, a miracle of that sort. But I think I don't see that happen, to be very honest. But you never know. It's Pakistan, as I said. Like, you won't be surprised if they, you shouldn't be surprised if they are the, you know, fourth team in the semifinal and they play India in the semifinals. You never know with Pakistan. Anything can happen. No one thought that they would be, you know, playing the T20 finals, World Cup final last year. They made it, isn't it? I mean, they were dead and buried and they're out for all mathematical calculations. Everything was done. I think one of the, like, associate nation won a game and helped them. Probably it was Netherlands again, which won against South Africa. That probably helped them. And exactly. Yes. They need that kind of a miracle to happen again. But not one. I think they need probably two or three results to go in their favor. And it's not impossible, but isn't looking probable at this point in time.
Okay. Fine. Now, Afghanistan, I think, have a tough road anyway. But I'm looking forward to a couple of games, especially when they take on Netherlands. Right?
Yeah.
So for me, a couple of very interesting matches. Australia, again, they seem to be able to not win against lower ranked teams, but they're able to do much better against higher ranked teams. Afghanistan, they have beaten Pakistan and
England so far. Right? Yeah.
So that seems interesting. So let's see how they go from here. Now, coming back to the other game, the 23rd game in the series, which was basically Bangladesh versus South Africa, yesterday's game. So this was in Wankhede. Thoughts on that innings by de Kock?
Yeah, it was like mad hitting from Klassen and de Kock. I think I can't believe, and I don't want to believe, that de Kock is going to retire after this World Cup. Why is he doing that? He's still 30 and he's probably got 4 or 5 years of cricket left in him. Unfortunate that we're going to, world cricket is not going to see him in this format. He's already retired from test matches. So he's one of those, I would say, underrated Ajit to a certain extent, because he hasn't got his due as an ODI opener. If you look at his numbers, an average of 45, 46 and a strikeout of 97. That's crazy, isn't it? I think even Rohit Sharma doesn't have that kind of a strike rate. Of course, the volume of runs Rohit has scored is much more, but still, I think de Kock has close to 6,000 runs at a strike rate of 98. And then he has got runs on all kinds of surfaces. He's got runs in South Africa. He's been doing that in India now. And even in the bilaterals against India, he was very comfortable against quality Indian seam attack. So he's one of those guys who makes batting looks very simple, very easy. Even in the IPL, you know, it's not about big shots or something. You don't feel that he's going hammer and tongs at you, but he has that knack of scoring at 140 in a T20 game without even showing that he's doing something special. So he's that kind of a batsman who has that knack of scoring quick runs, and obviously he's a keeper, and that's an added advantage. He's kind of an all-rounder, probably a captaincy material in my book. Probably should have been the captain probably 3 or 4 years ago when all the big boys left. Unfortunate that he wasn't given the responsibility, but still, I think South Africa will be, they're lucky to have his service, as simple as that. And the consistency with which he's batting, Ajit, in this World Cup, it's unbelievable. He's three, this was his third 100 in this World Cup in 5 or 6 games. So that's crazy, isn't it? I think, I won't be surprised if he gets 5 centuries in this World Cup and equals the record of Rohit Sharma of 5 centuries in the World Cup. He's got all the, he's doing all the right things to do that. And Wankhede, of course, you know the surface, right? Like it's one of the best batting surfaces in the country, along with the Chinnaswamy Stadium, and the boundaries are not really too big. So obviously, I think when these guys get their eyes in, they see the ball as a football. And I think it was crazy hitting, as I said, about Klassen. I probably felt that, you know, de Kock could get that double 100. I think 188 is their highest ODI score from Gary Kirsten. I remember that game against UAE in 1996 World Cup. That still is their highest ODI score by a South African batsman. That was in danger for us for some time, but unfortunately, de Kock got out before that. But anyways, I think he's probably due for a few more hundreds, Ajit, in this World Cup.
Absolutely. Also, it was a big feat of your fitness, because to bat that long and that hard
key wickets
in Mumbai, right? In that high heat
and humidity.
I mean, you didn't have to come keep, so it was lucky. Yeah. Otherwise, it would have been very much problematic, I guess.
Yeah, very much. Yeah.
But apart from him, we have to talk about the way South Africa finished. So even yesterday, right, when Aidan Markram got out 31st over, it was 167. So I remember tweeting saying, if they get to that sort of a score around the 30th, 31st over, the opposition is in trouble because they will start
dictating double.
Exactly same thing happened. And it was actually De Kock who I thought might actually get out. But so a good 50 for Captain Markram. Yesterday he was a standing captain. And of course, and then Heinrich Klaassen took over. So again, Heinrich Klaassen then kept hitting and then he was going for his 100 clearly in the last over and he was dismissed. So again, you can see in the last 10, 11 overs, I think they took 130 runs of Bangladesh attack. So they completely marmalized them. So Bangladesh starting the innings, I guess they did not have that much of hope.
Yeah, they started off as if they're chasing 260, 270. Their intent, unfortunately, was not there. I watched it live for a few hours. They're just going at 405 and over and keeping wickets in hand. And when they're chasing close to 400, I mean, like, how can you do that? And obviously, they had probably given it up in the dressing room itself. They probably felt that they have no chance against this South African attack. And yeah, you could see what happened there. And Momadullah got on off his like one of the best ODI World Cup innings by a Bangladeshi batsman, I would say. It was a very, very calculated innings and run a ball 111. He would take that in a losing cause. At least Bangladesh had some solace, something to take home.
Look, I mean, I had questioned his inclusion earlier. I mean, but now he's justified it and more, right? So one thing. The second thing, I'm thinking, look, he's doing what he's brought in for. He bats lower down the order, 6-7. He's supposed to probably score runs quickly and then, provide that quick impetus towards the end. But he's forced to always bat and bat deep, keep the tail together. He's doing more of like a test match sort of innings where he's sort of batting time. It should never have been that. So for me, South Africa also went in with a little bit of a rejigged attack. No Ngidi here, right? Rabada played, but then Izzat Williams took his place, Ngidi's place. Then Maharaj is playing. I expected Maharaj did a wonderful job, by the way, against a team that plays spin so well. Control. He had them exceptionally sort of under his thumb. So was very good to see. But for me, what really disappointed is the top order of Bangladesh. Much like, I mean, for the lack of a better term, I think they have been doing pretty decently, the top order. I think collectively, they have never fired to even get to 300. So I was thinking this might be a match where collectively they fire, they get to 300. Maybe, who knows, if they get there with enough time left, there are plenty of things possible, right? So, but it was all done and dusted. If you are, chasing 383, if you are 6 for 81, what chance do you have from that point on?
And it says it's gone. I mean, 99.9% you have still simply don't have any chance.
You're right. No, but I always say, if possible, try and get to some personal milestones. Why not? Right?
When you have nothing to gain from the match as a team, like these kind of things, I remember that Super Six game against Australia when India played in 1999. For all practical purpose, the game was done when India lost 4 wickets in heap and Azhar and it was Robin Singh and Jadeja, who probably took the chase till the 40th over. The run rate in those days, 10 or 12 runs, you're not going to get that. But Jadeja got 100. That's still a World Cup 100 against Australia, a quality attack. So he'll look back at his career and say that I got a century against Megra. So that's a point I wanted to make about Mohamedullah also. It's like, it's an achievement, Ajit. Let me put it this way. The team had no chance of winning it. You fought it out and got 100. And it helped, some sort of a respite and some sort of a respect to your team.
Correct. Look, he now has 100 away from home against South Africa, New Zealand and England, if I'm not wrong, in World Cups.
Yeah.
And that's a fantastic achievement. Not many an Asian player can claim these sort of things. So for somebody who we thought was past the hill, Mohamedullah has really proved a good point. Now, can the rest of them pick it up from there? Mushfiqur Rahim has been on and off. He's got a couple of 50s, I think. Shakib Al Hasan has been a disappointment with the bat. And for me, Litton Das, again, very much on and off. I would like to see some big runs from Litton Das, Shanto.
Yeah, his form is really worrying, I think. If Litton can give the kind of start he usually gives, I think half their problems would be solved.
Correct. So, some things that they have to look forward to, something they have to pick up. We hear that Shakib Al Hasan has gone back home to train with his personal coach for a short stint. Is it just that or maybe
Or he should be back for...
There's more to be had there, you think?
You never know with Bangladesh cricket, you know. It's like what happened in the past 2 months with Tamim, BCB and other things. You never know. Shakib might not even come back and say that this World Cup is done. We technically do not have any chance of qualifying. And yeah, of course, I mean, they do not have any chance of qualifying now. But still, I think there's a lot of pride to be played with. I think still what got four or five games left. And yeah, he should be back. He's the legend. He is probably, in my book, Bangladesh's greatest cricketer. So probably he should come back and continue with his duties.
So let's see. Let's hope that, you know, things fall in place for Bangladesh. They finish strong. We were always suspecting they were not probably having the firepower to make the semifinals, but maybe at least do well for themselves, right? Cause a couple of upsets in the last week or so.
Yeah.
Right? Last quarter of league games.
Yeah. And few people also predicted that they are a very good side in subcontinent. I wanted that to happen. You were playing in subcontinent with your spin attack and with a few quality batters what you have. Probably they should have challenged sides like, you know, New Zealand and other sides which doesn't really play spin well. But unfortunately, they just didn't turn up. Let me put it that way. They didn't turn up.
Now makes sense. What you say makes sense. So they have to now at least make the remaining games count. Get to a place where, you know, they can at least go back home happily. They have as passionate fans as any other South Asian team. So they don't want to go home and get in trouble, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we get to the game of the day, which was, well, not a happy game if you're a Dutch supporter.
It's unfortunate. And I just had a look at the scorecard, you know, just an hour back. And the way it is unfolded, it's really unfortunate. Like what a huge win for Australia, 300 plus runs, and it's a shot in the arm for them. Like, look, this has boosted their net run rate, and they're up and running now. Ajit, like, Australia have a great chance of making it to the top four now. Netherlands, full marks to them. They probably have punched above their weight, I would say, in a couple of games, and probably they should have won that game against Sri Lanka. They had Sri Lanka under trouble and probably had the game under control, and they was neck and neck up until the 44th, 45th over. They were in the game. Mm-hmm. That is some kind of an achievement. And to win a ODI game against a side like South Africa also speaks volumes. So they were able to do that. I mean, this resurgent South African side, which is pretty much like trampling every other opposition, the only side which is able to control them and or like, you know, defeat them was only Netherlands. So, yeah, man, there is some talent. As I said, in the last podcast, we were discussing this. There is a lot of talent in Netherlands, and it was on display against South Africa. Once they get that consistency by playing amongst the, you know, against the big boys consistently, probably they're going to be a much better side. And as I said, qualifying to the World Cup itself is an achievement. And I'm happy with the way they're turning up. And it's not that this is one-off game where they were completely outplayed. Apart from this, I think they've done well, Ajit.
No, I agree with everything you said, but the top order still was missing. For me, that is the one big worry. Yeah. The top order has not turned up, right? So when you look at today's game as well, first of all, a lot must be said for how well Warner is batting, right? If you're looking at Australia, this is like a perfect template of a game you want. You bat first, you make 400, right?
400.
Somebody, one of your openers gets 100. Your middle order people who are not scoring runs get some runs. Your maverick player gets 100 with literally no balls.
Right? Yeah. Right? Yes.
And then, you know, your bowlers come back and then they're out the opposition under 100. This is like how you would want it. If you asked the coach of Australia yesterday how you want today's game to go, he would have written the same points down, right?
Same script.
And they have delivered. Exactly. Right? His team has delivered.
Yeah. And Australia, after having lost a couple of games and one game by a huge margin, they were under tremendous pressure to, you know, get their net run rate, and not only winning the games, and they wanted the net run rate to be up.
Right.
So this game is just like the perfect thing. It's like a Christmas gift, probably a month and a half in advance for the team.
Correct. I mean, maybe the Christmas gift they'll want on November 19th. But we'll wait for now that, you know, also Zampa got 4 for 8 runs considered. Like, that's quite something, right? He polished the tail off. The last 4 wickets were his. What you would want exactly a leg break were to do for you. So these people, right?
Yeah.
Scott Edwards remained unbeaten. He saw his team collapse on the other end. So the other people like Rolof Vandermeer, Logan Thunberg, Aryan Dutt, these are the people who have been troubling every other attack out there, whereby, you know, taking time out of the game, batting 20, 30, 40 overs. Today, in comes a leg break bowler, he kills off. He kills off the game. That's exactly what you want. So, as I said, this is what an Australian coach's dream would have been, and they have delivered. His team has delivered for him. So, he'll be very happy, no doubt. Yeah. But also, now, if you look at the table, right, Australia still have a couple of tough games coming up for them.
England, Australia have two tough games against South Africa and England.
Right. So, now, if you were to look at the table, tell me how you see the rest of the tournament go, according to you. We are more or less half a stage.
Look, everything is sorted. Yeah, everything is sorted. I just... probably England have an outside chance of sneaking through at someone's expense. That could be in New Zealand, in my opinion.
Really?
Probably New Zealand will lose a couple of games going forward. I'm sure something says me that New Zealand can't be that consistent where they are now. They probably will lose two or three on the bounce going forward against quality teams. And they played quality cricket, taking nothing away from them. But probably once they face two or three quality sides back to back, probably they would lose. So England's only chance, Australia are not going to go out. Australia are going to make it to the top four. India pretty almost through. South Africa will make it by any chance. I mean, they are almost there. Pretty much they have one feet already, put already in the top four. So I think the only chance, only kind of a replacement or swap you would probably see is New Zealand and England. And apart from that, I don't see any other team making any kind of a big four or five, getting four or five victories on the trot and making it the top four. I don't see that one happening. Probably, yeah. That's why I tweeted also, probably this is probably one of the most boring World Cups. Lots of ODI, I mean, lots of one-sided games. And probably you don't have a contest, to be honest. And that, I was really excited, Ajita, about that 400 game. And so South Africa put up 400. I thought that England would come all their guns blazing and they would probably... Even if they don't get there, probably I felt that they would be in the game at least a 40 over and see how it goes. Unfortunately, they lost the match in about 6 or 7 overs. They're like 4 wickets down within a 10 overs. So only we're getting to see these kind of games. That India-Australia game was quite competitive. The other two games were, I think Pakistan chased down 350 against Sri Lanka. That was one game which was really competitive. Apart from that, it's just there. The count is there. So it's really unfortunate the way World Cup is being panned out. And let's see. I mean, let's hope that, you know, that we get to see some competitive games in the days to come.
Fair enough. But you are completely right of Pakistan there.
Yeah, Pakistan. As I said, Ajita, in the beginning, Pakistan don't have everything in their hands. They need few results to go in their favor. And one result I can understand, you know, one or two, but they need lot of results to go in their favor. And also the net run rate is probably not that great. So, you know, one eye on the net run rate, one eye on the victories. And look at the Pakistan team. The bowling is suffering, and also the batting, they're not playing current day ODI cricket. They're probably, as I said, the old-fashioned ODI cricket. You want players to go hammer and tongue. Look at the way Rohit Sharma is playing, how David Warner is playing. You need those kind of openers to get you that kind of a start. If your openers play out 10 overs and they are 40-45 for no loss, they're not actually, it's counterproductive for the batting team. And Pakistan exactly are doing the same thing. It was okay in the era of Sohail and Anwar, not now.
Yeah, all right. I see where you're coming from. Okay, those were all the World Cup topics I wanted to discuss. Now, moving away from the World Cup, well, I think we should remember a spin great from the famous quartet of Indian spinners, Bishan Singh Bedi, who's this week moved on from this world. So, we first of all offer our condolences to all the fans of cricket, Mr. Bedi's family and friends. So, when you look at his career. So very multifaceted man in terms of, in terms of what he has achieved. So first of all, 67 tests for India, 266 wickets. He captained India, right? He played in county cricket. Yeah. He was oftentimes considered as one of the most poetic actions, one of the most beautiful actions you can have, right? Most
his method. Action was dubbed poetry in motion. Yeah,
very good.
It was dubbed poetry in motion.
And I think some very big people have even said, even they were asked, right? So yeah, they said Bedi on one end and really yeah, involved on the other. That would be my dream.
Exactly. It was Jim Laker who said that. Exactly. That like my perfect like definition of an English summer is bright sunshine, lots, one end there is Lindwall and the other end is Bishan Singh Bedi bowling. I mean, what else can you ask for as a bowler? That just speaks volumes, doesn't right, it? Like someone like Jim Blake is saying that about an Indian bowler.
Correct. So, but then he was also a manager of the Indian team, famously, you know, threatening to put the Indian team in the sea.
1990. No, and it's actually, he gave a justification for that. Not justification. He actually cleared the air actually. Mm. What he actually meant, supposedly or allegedly, was that he was so disappointed with the team for their performances, and he just could have probably, he's apparently, you know, mentioned that, you know, if these guys after this game, if they want to jump up to the Pacific Ocean, I won't stop them. That was what it was actually meant, you know. That was what Bishan Singh Bedi said actually. But in the press it came that Bishan Singh wants to throw the Indian team into the Pacific Ocean after the disastrous tour. I think it was after that 1990 English tour, but they lost everything, and it was a disastrous tour, 1990, where he was the manager. So that is how it is. That's a part of the Bedi folklore. And yeah, as you mentioned, Aditi is one, I mean, beyond numbers, 67-266 test matches. When you look at those numbers in 2023, you would probably feel, what is the first about?
I mean, no,
266 test wicket is not a big deal. Yeah, a lot of people. Yeah, they do. In that era, 266 test wickets is a huge thing. When we look at now, someone like Muditharan is 800. So, like, what? Now, he has got, what, 30% of what Muditharan has got? But he's still a great. Why is he great? It's not only about the numbers. He was a great man. Forget about his cricketing exploits. This man was, like, I always call him the conscience keeper of Indian cricket. He was someone who was, like, ready to take on anyone. The integrity is pretty much the word which is synonymous with him. The kind of respect he commands, Ajit, not only in India, overseas also, the Australians, English people, even Pakistan is a great fans of Bishan Bedi, as they call Bishan Pa. So, like, this man, as you mentioned, he was a multifaceted man and an anti-establishment right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, that when he was the captain, there are two instances where, Ajit, I would like to mention where his integrity stood out. One was the one in 1975-76, the Kingston Test at the Jamaica, where the West Indies quartet, you know, kept on bowling a barrage of bouncers, and just basically they were not trying to get the batsmen out. They just wanted to injure the Indian batsmen. So Indian score was what, 105 or something, five, and everyone was injured. Vishan Singh, it was G.R. Vishwanath, Anshuman Gaikwad, everyone was injured. And Bishan Singh Bedi declared and said, I don't have any more batsmen to go on bat out there. That game was lost. Where he said, he came to the press and said that this is not cricket. This is not the way you're supposed to play cricket. Mm. Apparently, that happened because India had chased on 400 plus in the previous test match at Trinidad.
Correct.
So what Clyde Waugh did, he packed his bowlers. He packed his bowling attack with four fast bowlers and went for the kill. So that was one game. And then in 1978, the Sahiwal ODI against Pakistan. You know, India were on the verge of winning that ODI.
Correct.
Then Pakistan started their negative tactics of bowling bouncers. And the bouncers were so high, as Anshuman Gaikwad quips, if Vishwanath and Anshuman Gaikwad were apparently batting, and the bouncers bowled, if two Vishwanaths, like the exact bat time is that, if there is another person of Vishwanath's side standing on his shoulder, even he couldn't have reached those balls. That was the kind of bonuses they were bowled. And he had all this nonsense from the dressing room, just quietly went up to the match referee or the manager of Pakistan team, and he said, this is not, you know, it's not happening. I mean, this is not cricket. And he said that, you guys are batting on your hands and go and score runs, and probably Vishwanath is very short and you should send some other batsmen. That's what Pakistani manager said. So he had all this nonsense and said, that's it, I'm not going to play. This is not cricket. Come back, guys. We are going to forfeit this game. So that did not go well with the Indian establishment. He was sacked from the captaincy after that. But even for today, even in the recent interviews also, he said that, I did the right thing. This is not cricket. This is not the way cricket should be played. Of course, Pakistan were on the threshold of losing, and a loss to India at home. Look, entails greater consequences. Your house can be burned down, you can be stoned up. So these kind of things used to happen in the 70s. So Pakistan, probably they probably delayed the inevitable or something of that sort, but they probably did not expect India to forfeit that game. This probably sums up Bishan Singh Bedi's career, Ajit. Like, he was someone who was a colorful person. And that Northamptonshire thing, when he was a captain in 1977-78.
Mm-hmm.
And famously or infamously, John Lever had managed to win two test matches in Delhi and Kolkata, if I'm not wrong, mm-hmm. with his swing bowling. He was no great shakes with his bowling. He was not a Ian Botham, you know. But he was able to extract tremendous amount of spin, swing, and he was able to get India out twice. And like, two matches down India were. And in the third game at Madras, Bishan Singh Bedi finds that there's some content of Vaseline in the ball. So what Bishan Singh Bedi does, he goes to the press and says, they are employing some, malpractice. They're employing some these kind of cheap tactics to extract swing. I think apparently it was Tony Gray who was England captain, and this, went completely out of proportions, and the English press did not take it kindly, and they just started writing a barrage of articles against Bishan Singh Bedi. And the worst part was the BCCI did not stand for their captain at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
They just left him high and dry. And unfortunately, because of his outburst and his nature, I think, like, which he did the right thing as an Indian captain. He's an Indian captain first. Then the Northamptonshire string comes into place. So unfortunately, Northamptonshire, so they retaliated by cancelling his contract without any legal kind of explanation. Just cancelled his contract, who was actually a captain. He was actually leading Northamptonshire at that point in time. They sacked their captain.
Mm.
The contract was revoked. And then the legal battle started, and BCCI did not spend a penny on this great man. So he lost everything there, but still he never regretted that. Yeah, I lost a bit of money, but I stood for what is that. What is right? That's what I said. And he means no words, Ajit. Like, as famously or infamously, I would say, he never agreed what Muthiah Muralidharan was doing.
I remember.
Till the end of his life, he just said, yeah. He never agreed that he was a proper spinner. He was. He said that he was a javelin thrower. And he even took on Sunil Gavaskar for allowing him the 22-degree leeway in 2004. What does Sunil Gavaskar know about spin bowling? That's what he said then, 2004. So he was never afraid of taking on anyone, no matter how big a cricketer you are or how big an administrator you are. For him, what stood out was only cricket. And one anecdote I would like to remember was, I think in the late 90s and the mid-90s, one of the administrators from Afghanistan wanted Bishan Singh Bedi in Afghanistan to teach spin to young kids. And they said that there's no remuneration for this, but would you do that? We'll take up all the expenses. And he said, son, anything for cricket.
Right.
So that was the kind of person Bishan Singh Bedi was. He was never, never shy of sharing his knowledge or never, ever apprehensive of sharing his knowledge to anyone. You could see the Australian cricket team in the 90s used to have Bishan Singh Bedi in their ranks, in their camp, and Shane Warne, and into 1998, then Jason Kreza in 2008. They were guided by this great man. So, yeah, I mean, like, if Australians are adoring him to that action, that just speaks volumes about this great man.
Absolutely.
And rightly, he was also included in the Wisden. One of the, I think he's the only spinner. Andy Kumble got into that later. But out of the quartet, I think he was the only spinner to be inducted into the ICC Hall of Fame.
Right. No, he was really worth his weight in gold, this gem of an individual. And thank you for some wonderful memories and a lovely tribute, Ramchandra.
Yeah, and one more thing I wanted to add about Bishan Singh Bedi was, he actually started his career with Punjab.
Mm.
Then he moved to Delhi. Right. And he made Delhi a superpower. He took on Mumbai. I think Karnataka had won challenge Mumbai and won Ranji Trophy in the mid-70s. Then Mumbai. It was Mumbai's domination. I mean, it was Delhi's domination. He got guys like Kirti Azad, Mohinder Amarnath, Madan Lal. He groomed these young kids and, was able to challenge Mumbai and meet them handsomely.
Mm.
He was a great captain, not only for North Zone and Delhi, also for India. I mean, the records don't speak that, because India hardly used to win test matches in those days. But the way he led the side, I think Kapil Dev also made his debut under Bishan Singh Bedi in 1977-78 in Pakistan. So, yeah, all in all, a great cricketer, huh? And I wish that every cricket fan, even someone who is in his teens or early 20s, I wish that, you know, they pick up something and read about Bishan Singh Bedi. Probably you will never see another cricketer of that character. He's just a great man. I mean,
no, absolutely.
Whenever you read about him, you get goosebumps. I mean, that's the kind of man he is.
Perfect. I mean, wonderful thoughts once more. Now, going forward, we want to finish this podcast on a high. So, we hear that in Sheffield Shield, there will be a new record because two female umpires, right? Claire Polosok and Elwas Sheridan will be standing in... For the first time, women's team will be standing in a first class game in November. So this will be for two games in November in the Sheffield Shield in Australia. So congratulations to Polosok and Sheridan. They have broken new ground, and long may it happen that, you know, we are looking for equality and we're looking for other things in this weird world. And this is one nice thing for sure. Umpires doesn't matter really, right? Who the umpire is. So this is a good way of looking for
having both women umpires and it's a great thing. I think we had one woman umpire in the Ranji Trophy in the recent past, probably before the COVID break. We probably had one woman umpire in the Ranji Trophy, but this is new. I think having the whole setup, you know, comprising women is a great step forward.
Right. So this is this is always a nice thing to see, and we hope more and more of these steps are taken eventually. Claire Polosok is already having the record as the first woman to have stood in an international, a men's international, that is.
Yeah.
So let's hope more and more of these we get to see from her and other umpires like this around the cricketing world.
Yeah.
As always, Ramu, thanks for coming on the podcast, offering some very nice thoughts. And this time it looks like you've really come prepared when it comes to Mr. Bedi. Did it come out of your natural love for him, or did you actually look up?
No, of course. I think I picked up Bedi. My first memories of Bishan Singh Bedi was in, you remember that match ka mujrim thing just happened in the early 2000s? Remember that? Yeah. The early 2000s where every single Indian law used to be scrutinized to that extent. I used to get like, my Hindi was poor, but somehow I used to understand things, and Bishan Singh Bedi used to tear apart like every Indian player who used to like not perform. And Ganguly was like brutally like, you know, like Ganguly was going through a bad patch then. So that was then. When I got into reading, and then I read Indian cricket history, and I felt that this guy is a gem. I mean, like, no one like him. Of course, I mean, he was not forespoken as other cricketers were from that era. Mm-hmm. But this guy's achievements, and apart from his cricketing exploits, the things he stood for,
right.
As I said, the conscience keeper, as I mentioned. So apparently I'm writing a piece. I started writing a piece about him, which is named The Conscience Keeper of Indian Cricket. Wow. And you could see that when... the famous Firoz Shah Kotla ground, which was renamed Arun Jaitley Stadium recently after Arun Jaitley's death, he did not take it kindly. Bishan Singh Bedi was really, really furious, and he said that there is a stand in my name. I don't want that stand to be there once you name the stadium after a politician. So he just said that. There is no more the Bishan Singh Bedi stand in the Kotla Stadium now. I think he was very serious about that, and he got his name out of the stadium also. That's what he stood for. And Rajiv Sardesai mentioned one of those anecdotes where, you know, from the 90s, where Bishan Singh Bedi used to write pieces for, if I'm not wrong, Indian Express then. Mm. So there was a game, it seems, apparently between journalists and the politicians, basically MPs, you know, who are like cricket fans.
Right.
So Madhavraj Sindhya was a great cricket fan who was an administrator also from MP. So he apparently had asked Bishan Singh Bedi to join their team. And you know what Bishan Singh said, Bedi on face said to him, I don't play with bloody corrupt politicians. You guys are way too corrupt. So imagine an ex-cricketer saying this to an administrator, a powerful administrator. Who would do that?
Well,
only Bishan Singh Bedi can do that.
He lived.
That's his legacy.
He was a brave man.
His life, King says. He's a brave man. And he was a heavy critic of IPL. He used to just say it's rubbish. And unfortunately, you know, he probably could not keep abreast with the changing tide. I mean, change is something which is inevitable. Probably he was too old school And yeah, that's something which you cannot agree. You got to, you know, you can't keep on playing practice matches of 3 or 4 days. You can't have a tour planned like it used to be in the 70s and 80s. This is a change. And this is the money spinner. And unfortunately, as I said, these old school guys would probably never agree upon that. But having said that, I mean, full marks to him for the way he has led this team and for passing on the baton in the 70s from taking it from probably what it was Wadekar, then Gavaskar, then Bedi, and then it went on to Kapil Dev later as a captain. So that legacy, I think his name will be remembered, Ajit. As long as India plays cricket, as long as spin bowling is discussed, I think it was. And Northamptonshire apparently had a manual on his bowling. There was a thesis written about his bowling, and they had published it. And then after this whole saga of John Labour Vaseline, they called him a chucker. Would you believe that? These things happened in the 70s. Yeah, that's what. Like, it's. I want all my listeners and friends to pick up a book of Mission Singh Bedi, which was released last year. It was like Sardar of Spin, if I'm not wrong. I can, I help you with that. I think it was Suresh Menon was the author.
Wow, okay.
You need to read that book. It's a complete, a depiction of his whole career. So I enjoyed reading that book recently. I read a couple of books on him, but this book has all the details about his career and personal life and everything.
Perfect. Thank you once again for all the useful information about books and so on. Before we let you go, anything you want to shout out about your own work, upcoming work from recent past?
I think my piece on Bedi should be published tomorrow. I was caught up with some. I started off. I wrote some 200 words and was caught up with work, and that should be released and but should be published by tomorrow. And the reading is going on. And I think probably up until the World Cup, I won't be able to write much. But once it is done, I'll get back to consistent, writing, and probably I think at least a couple of pieces every month. That's what I'm targeting. Let's see how it goes. That's it.
Thank you very much. So we wish all our listeners a good day wherever they may be listening from. And we wish to have your company in the upcoming episodes.
Sure. It's always there. Yeah. Thanks, Ajit. Yeah.
Bye.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Podcast Network.